I'd like to call this meeting to order at 19:04 hours. Approval of the agenda as circulated. So moved by Councillor Roykel. Seconded by Herb. Question? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. Approval of the notes from July 6, 2023. So moved by Councillor Oikel. Seconded by Councillor Greek. Question? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. Business arising from the minutes. 4.1, strategic priority survey to departments. I guess you're up.
Okay, so we got 13 results back from the departments that we sent these out to. We had one come in late, so there was 12 that came in within the window, and one came in later than that. So we still include that because it's still information we want. It would have been nicer to see a bigger intake in it, but or uptake on it, but it is what it is. So we'll go through these results.
Can you state for the record how many fire departments received
so
them?
If you include the town of Mahone Bay and the town of Lunenburg, or District 1 and 2 in Maitre's Cove, there's 25. Because Wildville and those guys are all together with Tri-District now, So that's how that works. Yeah, so it's half, basically, just a little under. So anyway, we'll go through this. Do you want me to read them, verbatim, or do you guys have a chance to look through them? I can kind of just go through and skim over them. So the first one was if fire services thought that SCBA testing, functional testing, should be an annual event on the registration. It was never a mandatory thing in the past, but 99% of the departments are doing it anyway. So it'd be an easy one for everybody to do. And when you look at that, there was 100% of the participants that said they're in favor of doing that. So and the next one was, do you think face piece fit testing should be a requirement of annual registration? So that's the face piece that firefighters wear on their face to protect them from the gases or substances that they could be exposed to in fire or whatever. And you can see there that there was 66% or almost 67% that said yes, and a little over 33% that said no. So the majority of people thought it was a good thing, except some of the comments. When you read some of the comments down there, there's only one fit tester that's available free of charge, and there's training involved with it. So getting the fit tester and getting it out there for everybody to utilize is not easy. If you have a third party do it, then there's a cost involved per firefighter that's done. It still says that the NFPA says that annual fit testing should still be done, even though we have positive pressure. So positive pressure means there's always pressure inside the mask. So if the seal breaks on against your skin, it pushes air out. So you have a less chance of pulling the contaminants in from the atmosphere into your face piece and into your body. But it still can happen, but it helps reduce it greatly. So those are some of the things people are talking about there, that different comments that were made. Somebody says that they can do a fit test every time they put a mask on. I have some comments on that, but I won't really say what they are. So these are just some of the things that some of the departments had said. Say they, departments can handle face piece testing, yes and no, and that was another one about borrowing and training for the fit tester, and if it's not always available, it's hard to get. So those are some of the comments on that.
Is there a facial hair policy throughout the departments with respect to SCBA?
So, no. Some departments are very strict on it, and some aren't. But if you go by the Nova Scotia health guidelines, anything over a 24-hour growth is considered excessive. Or if you have a goatee and you have your under where your seal goes is clear, a lot of departments are saying that's okay. So it's kind of up to the departments how they're doing it.
I just wonder if that's a factor in this question, maybe.
It wasn't actually part of the question, but it could definitely affect face seals, yes, for sure. Next one, hose testing was another one if they thought it should be a requirement. Again, 66.6 said they thought it was a good idea, and four of the 13 departments, or 33%, said no. So some of the things there, again, is it's very time-consuming. Some of them didn't think that it the hose is affected enough to have to be done every year. Some departments do one truck this year and one truck the next year and rotate them that way. And they said that it's a lot of work, difficult to get personnel to do it. So those are some of the comments you see there from that. You know, if a hose sits in a hose bed for 12 months and never gets pulled off, every time the hose is folded over and kinked, wherever that kink is, it has a tendency to become more worn. So, you know, some departments will take hose off, utilize it in training, and pack it so it's packed differently every time they put it back on. But if it sits there for any length of time in vibration of the truck in motion, can actually damage that hose where it's kinked and bent over itself, right? So some of the things that can look out, but it is a very time-consuming thing, and you could get a third party to do testing, but then there's another cost involved with having the hose done that way too, right? So those are some of the comments that were made here. Question five was, does your department have bunker gear replacement policies to meet NFPA 1851 standards? So that's basically if bunker gear is 10 years and under, and it's still inspected and has its qualification standards, everything's good, you're good for 10 years. After that, interior firefighters shouldn't be using bunker gear unless it's, you know, newer than 10 years, not 10 years and older. So this one, there's a couple comments here that red tag firefighters, which are interior in our county, have gear of less than 10 years. That was one comment. And then another department says they replace between 2 and 3 sets of bunker gear a year. And they haven't yet replaced everything, but they're working on it. So a lot of departments I know do that now, that their interior firefighters will have up-to-date bunker PPE, like the bunker gear, et cetera. And then people that are in the warm zone or cold zone that aren't doing, like, right hands-on interior firefighting, they'll get the older gear and utilize it just because of cost factors and things like that. And if you guys want to speak up, if I'm saying anything that's kind of out of whack, don't be afraid to speak up. I'm just kind of reading what's here. Another question six, does your department have a department-appointed safety officer, not a scene safety officer? So that is like occupational health and safety officer that a department would have. That isn't necessarily a scene safety officer when you have a call or you're on scene, not operational. So that person can be appointed by the officer when they get on scene. To be the scene officer. This one here is talking about a department safety officer. They can be the same. But typically that this question I think was asked about if they have like their own safety officer to handle like health and safety stuff. And it just says there on some of the comments, too many priorities. We deal with this operationally through the officers group. Normally the chief and deputy chief looked after this if no one's appointed. Again, that could be the size of the fire scene. Also, if it's small enough, they may be able to do that, but on a larger scene, it's hard for them to see everything. At present, our scene safety officer does both roles. As a volunteer fire department, we don't know who's going to respond when a call comes in, so the scene safety officer could be anyone. The scene is responsibility, could be everybody's responsibility. So, again, they're thinking of the on-scene stuff, and this is kind of looking at like a policy to help firefighters in the general role of occupational health and safety stuff. Some departments have their own occupational health and safety, and some don't, and I don't know what level that's at. Safety is everybody's responsibility, 100% it is, same as any organization or workplace. And we had one until this year. They retired, and then they had not been replaced yet, so they hope to have a new safety officer soon. So there is a training. There is training to go along with a safety officer, and there's some pre-protocols that you should meet for years of service and training and stuff in order to become a safety officer, because you have to understand fire behavior and building construction and what happens to it. And what to look for as things kind of start going south on you, right? So that's kind of the on-scene safety officer and fire station or the occupational safety officer is kind of like what you have in your workplace that kind of just oversees everything in the fire hall, make sure that everybody's doing things in a safe manner and following policy and things like that. So, does your department have a pre-incident planning for commercial structures in your district? So, 61, a little over 61% said they did, and 38, a little over, said they didn't. Not full coverage on all commercial structures, or some want to comment. Some not at all, work in progress. Some say we have. We are single-family residential. Some do, or that's what they have in their area. I mean, I have commercial. Some structures, but not all. Pre-planning was never done in our department, but we organized a committee to start working on it. Other things that we have done up to date that we are prioritized. So I think it's a kind of a mix out there as to how many people have what done. Some departments have a lot of the heavy risk areas in their areas done, and some departments don't. It all depends on, I guess, where they're at and how they do things. So that's not a really refined or defined, I guess, area. How's that sound right? That's just my knowledge from what I know of the area and the different meetings we go to. Question 8, does your department use other department facilities for training? 84.6 said yes, 15.3 said no. So some of the other fire department training areas, some private sites, other areas like Bridgewater, LaHave, Hebbville, and Northfield I know has some, Walden, Blockhouse, New Germany. So areas that are close to each other a lot of time will train in each other's training areas, but there's travel time to go back and forth to those different areas when there's training involved, right? So you could have a 20-minute or a 30-minute travel time to do training in some of these areas that you may not have the ability to do on your own, so that can affect, you know, calls, or you'd have to put somebody on mutual aid while you're away or whatever. Dayspring has a smoke hose some use. Lunenburg and District Fire Department, their area, they have a training for grounds. Bridgewater training facilities, Lay Burn Building, and they some people use the there's a trailer Hebbville has that's confined space kind of in a bunch of other little things inside for firefighters to crawl around in. And Port Medway has a training facility also. So some of the fire services that are out that way more could utilize some of the stuff like that Queens County has. How many active firefighters are in your departments have level one? So you can see there the numbers of the departments, how many people have members that are level one trained. So some of them are very high and some of them aren't. So it's, again, it depends on the number of people in their fire department, and it could be risk in any areas also. So, and it could be the age of the fire service in that area too. So. Question 10, how many active firefighters are certified to level one, which means they've taken extra training and they've like gone to take the actual certification for it? So you can see the numbers are a bit lower there, but still, you know, fairly some high numbers for some of the departments. A lot of firefighters will take, like, the basic level one training, and they go take the pro board is where they get the certification, right? So they have to go in and take the test and do certain modules and practicals, and then they get signed off that they're to meet the NFPA standard for that level one firefighter. And I'll say while we're on that, that the level one fire training that they've done here in the last couple of years, there are a number of firefighters, I don't know the exact number, but there are a number that are going to go and challenge the level one through that training they've taken locally to get their level one certification too. So that's good to see.
So my question is the red, what was it? Red tag. What level is that?
So that would be like your level one firefighter. So it could be level one certified or level one trained. So that means you have the basic firefighting knowledge to be able to go in interior on a building and understand fire behavior and how it works and the techniques and tactics utilized to put water where it needs to go and those kind of things. So it's the same training as the like level one and trained or level one certified. It just means certified. You took the next step and actually went to go to get that pro board certification and a certificate saying that. And the other one, you just get certificates as you do each of the modules through all of that process. So we have red, which is like the interior, and then there's a silver, which is like a cold zone or exterior firefighter, and then there's a green, which is like a new firefighter or somebody that doesn't go into the warm or hot zones. They kind of just stay on the outside. So it's a way for fire departments to see who's what and who can be where they shouldn't be, and that the tags are you know, in the right position when people are moving around the fire ground. So it's just a way to kind of accountability and see what's going on, who's where. What was that, Dan? They said we had members complete the Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services Level 1 program. So there was, what, 16? 18. Yeah. It was 20, I think, to start the deal. I think it was like 18 to finish or something. So, I mean, that's pretty good for our area. So, I mean, it's, it takes a lot of time to put that training on, so you, you
when's can't. That, when's the new course coming on?
We're going to have a
meeting.
TBD. Yeah, to be
we've
determined.
We've got like five to go. Like, we've been waiting. Yeah.
There's a list.
Everybody's waiting.
That's the issue when you only have a very small trainer base, and you have to travel large distances to get to the different training grounds, right? It really plays havoc on, you know, trying to get everybody where they need to be. So, yeah, so but we're working through it.
So because there's level one, is there a level two and a level three? And if so, what are they?
There are level two firefighters. You want to comment on that? You're the...
Level two is not something that we handle in Lunenburg County. It's more specialized firefighting skills. And essentially any firefighter who has that level one certification, not just the training, you have to have the certification, is eligible to go for level two certification. And because that's a pro board certificate, the only body in Nova Scotia that can administer pro board certificates is the Firefighter School in Waverly. Same as the level one. That's the only place to go and get the official certification. So the firefighter on their own would do their own personal training in-house, like on their own, and then go and challenge for it. And there are fixed days, I think twice a year, up at the fire school that you can go and do that. As for level three, I've never heard of that. After that, it would just be more specialized training in particular areas of firefighting.
Industrial, being able to fight industrial fires, things like that, hazmat. That type of training?
Yeah, well, hazmat comes into even basic firefighting. That level one firefighting covers like a higher levels of the hazmat stuff now, but there are still specialized areas in that, but Emily's a fire school instructor, so that's why I pointed to her, right? What barriers do members face on doing obtaining their level one training or certification? So the Lunenburg Regional training was great. However, there's more people needing it than we have open positions. Like I said, you know, there's limited instructors and trainers to do that, and they can only put so much training on themselves. Every other weekend they were doing, I think, wasn't it? Every other weekend or once a month?
Yeah, well, the first year we did once a month, and then we started doing every other weekend to not have it end up being an 8-month program, which is what it had been.
Yeah. But it's time-consuming, not just for the members taking the course, but for the instructors, because the instructors have to be there every weekend, too, because we don't have a pool that can spread out more. So that's something that they're trying to work on, too. So.
And also... because it involves people, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes admin. So Darren's involved in a lot of that. Andy Wenzel, the deputy chief from Bridgewater, handles a lot of the communications with departments. I handle a lot of the recording of attendance. Every practical students get certificates. Chris handles the administration of a lot of that side of it as well. So, like, three of us in this room are very heavily involved, and it takes up, it's not just the, say, 8 hours on a Sunday that we're there training. It's probably about that equivalent in preparation time, because we don't just show up and say, oh, what are we doing this week? We meet beforehand, we say, okay, these are the skills we're covering this week. You're going to do this, you're going to do that. What are you comfortable with? So it's quite an involved thing that we've taken on through Lunenburg Regional.
I'm just curious, is there any weight given to departments that may not have a number of people that have this training? So when it's offered, like I see here, it says like there's a, you know, wait time course availability, it fills up quickly. So looking at the previous information that we have, I'm just wondering, like, if there's a department that only has maybe one or two people with this level of certification, is there a weight given, more weight given to enrolling maybe somebody from one of those departments as opposed to somebody who has, you know, several of these certified levels?
No, not really, because then on the other hand, you'd have to look at their call volume. So if you've got a department that's got one or two trained, but they're only getting three calls a year, compared to the next department that's getting close to 100 calls a year, because we all know the turn-up during the day isn't great, so who needs priority? The ones getting 100 calls a day?
So there is weight given then. So that is a factor?
It's first come, first serve.
First come, first serve.
Unfortunately, what's happened in the past is that a message will get sent out through the email channels, usually through Lunenburg Regional, and it's really just whoever is on the ball about getting the email and replying to it. And because there was such a gap in training for probably about 5 years, covering the COVID years, but then a little bit before as well, there is this backlog in people who need to get trained. And we are just so limited in the amount of students that we can actually take that it fills up almost instantly, and we have a wait list. And we've actually had dropouts after the first week, and then we'll get somebody else in to fill that spot. So we'll have students kind of, but we don't have them come along any more than the first or maybe second week, because then they're just too far behind to make up. So, yeah, it's a balancing act. And like Chief said, we're going to have a meeting in the next few weeks. And we've done two of these now, so we've learned some lessons, and we may have to make some changes. But
yeah, since we started this, since all the departments just got around on the price difference of what we can do it for compared to what they would have to pay for through fire school, everybody's trying to jump on board all at once. And, well, there's quite a wait list now because everyone, just because of the price, can afford to get their members trained that way.
Yep. It's not an easy answer for that, just like recruitment and retention, right? They're trying to get through it the best way they can. It says, with the new county level one, just the wait time, so many departments have members waited long training, or wanted the training. And the fire school level one is time and cost. So I don't know what a level one firefighter used to be like, $1,800 for the whole thing. I don't know what it is now.
I actually don't know what it is now.
It's close to double that now.
Is it really? Yeah, so it's very price prohibitive for a lot of departments if they got to pay, you know, $2,200 to $3,000 for a level one firefighter. So that's some of the things. Other commitments, people say. No barriers, just older volunteer firefighter brigades that don't want to take that training. Committing time, like another one, time and location, volunteer work jobs, training nights and weekends, you know, it takes them away from family or whatever. Not very many options on getting the training, time and commitment and time. So you can see the big thing is the people's time and the commitment it takes to do that, right? There's no easy answer for that one because that's what it takes.
Darren, it's close to 200 hours, somewhere in that vicinity. I think if we talked to it years ago, and I think it figures out somewhere close to around 200 hours.
It was probably close to that when I took with the online courses and then the
14-hour
days.
Yeah.
And then the July fire weekend.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the things on the training part. So you can see the big chunk. Some of it is cost. But the biggest thing is sometimes distance, but the big thing is the people's time to do it, right, and the commitment it takes. What other supports or collaboration to training would like to see from the Fire and Emergency Services Committee or Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services? You can see there was a total of 10 answers there, 100% for ones that answered this. Increased access to fit testing would be a huge, as this is a backlog, and paying $50 per member, so there's the cost factor for a fit test on a face piece if they need to get it done. Another one just said, good question. Mutual aid training, sometimes database and equipment from neighboring municipalities or large-scale events, forest fires and floods. Mutual aid is a huge thing still and helps a lot of departments pull through calls if they're large and they don't have people respond through the day, whatever. training cost reimbursement, something somebody put on here. So I provide opportunities for all types of training for all levels, more funding for training, free local training opportunities. Well, the Lunenburg level one training is free currently, and that might change. It's hard to say. There might be a small fee to help cover some of the costs. We need more training sessions on an ongoing basis from both groups. High-angle rescue and hazmat technician, somebody said, a stronger voice in the fire school to have them provide better options for training and more training session standards for all officer positions. So the fire school does offer, I think it's like 13 or 14 free courses that are affiliated with the insurance industry in the province. So they take, I think it's like 4% or something like that, or 0.4%. They take off of insurance each year, and that money goes to the fire school, and there's 14 courses that are given free of charge for firefighters. So you can go on their website, and there's a whole a bunch of different training that can be taken that departments can give their members. 15, does your department regularly attend Lunenburg Regional and Emergency Services meetings? So the ones that answered it said yes, they do. And then there are times that I can't attend the location and call service, being in my job. Also, Lunenburg Regional would continue with reminders that I and Ryan responding that would be helpful. So there's been some issues with those things, but not everybody can make all the meetings all the time. Did you know Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services are developing OGs, or GOGs, or General Operating Guidelines? So they have a committee that's been putting some together, but they're not a mandatory operating guideline. They're a guideline that departments are, they approve at Lunenburg Regional, and departments can take them and utilize them, or they can manipulate them to fit their interests if they need to. So that's what those are. And 92% said they did know, and 7.6% said no, they didn't know. So the majority of people that attend the meetings or get emails from them know that they're working on those.
Chris, you got a question there?
Pardon me?
Chris, the last question where the one comment was about the I am responding message, do you know for certain if every fire department in Lunenburg Regional uses I am responding?
I don't know for certain. I know. I think the majority do, but the issues that came up with that is not all fire departments wanted messaging to go out over that, right? So there was some concerns over what went over the messaging and how it went. And there was, I think there was a consent form that Lunenburg Regional sent to all the fire chiefs saying, if you're okay with us doing that, we'll do it, and if you aren't, we won't. So some departments get it and some don't, because it's just not a global thing, right? They just don't want.
Chastity has a question. Chastity, you're on.
Thanks, Sandra. Just further to Michelle's comment, does that messaging system go over cell phones? And then would there be an issue of cell phone service to be able to respond, or is this done through the pagers?
I am responding through cell phone, so it's the same as what the municipality uses when there's stormy days or stuff like that. It's the same messaging system. So it is an internet-based cellular phone connection that goes out from a central area and then fans out to anybody that's connected to it. So if you're not in a good spot, you may not get it for sure until you get to a spot.
It can do emails too.
Emails, and I'm not sure if anybody's doing pager tests with that on them anymore. I don't think so. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, and I was curious if, because we all know what cell phone reception is like,
yeah,
if that made a difference in people being able to respond back. So, thank you.
Okay. 16, Lunenburg, did you know Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency? Oh, I just did that. I went by that. Does your department have GOGs in place? So 12 said 92% did, and 7.69%, they didn't. That one department didn't have any in place. Currently working on them, or we have bylaws and standard operating procedures. So I have no idea really how or who has how many are out there, but I think there's different bits and pieces of operating guidelines and procedures out there that departments utilize for their own individual use in their areas. Do you need help creating a specific GOG? And it was a pretty strong no to that.
Wondering if the if the the percentage that was yes, it needed help, were also the people that didn't have them. Do you know whether or not that was the case?
I don't know that. Oh, okay. As I said, Town of Lunenburg Fire Department, I'm not sure what that meant. I'm assuming that they have them. Maybe that's what that means. I know they would have those. Templates would be appreciated, and other departments are willing to share and would eliminate creating them on their own. So, you know, to sort of recreate the wheel, share them. And I know departments have done that in the past with each other. But I don't know the real answer to that. Do you think the adoption of a standardized basic general operating guideline could be implemented across the district, i.e. a scene safety officer, for instance? And 75% said yes and 25% said no. I think they could be if it was reasonable and had proper research. Some of these are lacking. More of the above should be done. GOGs are good guidelines, and each department are able to use or expand on their own GOGs. All departments have different capabilities, structures, et cetera, to determine how OGs should be written. Possibly, but with a Class 3 driver's license road testing issue brought up at Lunenburg Regional, and the issue of finding and willing able to teach a Class 3 and drawbacks on standardization across the board. So a little different thing there about some departments have it mandatory that drivers have to have a Class 3 provincial authorized license to drive a truck with air brakes over 15,000 kgs. And some departments just go by the Motor Vehicle Act that says if you have a Class 5 with air endorsement, you're good to go, but it's only during an emergency. So there's where the liabilities and gray zones lie. Does your department have a personnel policy? 61% said yes and 38% said no. Currently working on one. Covers parts of the department's GOGs, department's bylaws, but not specific personnel policy. Department is currently working on updating bylaws and GOGs. Not sure what is meant by the question. Can't answer it if I'm not sure what the personnel policy is. And has it been implemented? It has been implemented as a GOG package instead of a personnel policy. So a bylaw is kind of like what governs the department on how they need to meet, however they're incorporated. And then the policy side of things are like the officer's duties and how you respond to the hall and those kind of things, like personnel policy we would have in a workplace, right? Does your policy include diversity, equality, and inclusion section? 41% said yes, 25% said no, and 33% said it was not applicable. It definitely should be included in this one department said. So it's kind of a close across the board. The yeses are a little higher, but does the policy include a conflict resolution section? 58% said yes, 25% said no, and 16% said not applicable. Any conflicts are handled by the directors as part of our bylaws and in process of updating them. Does your department have an intake policy for new member applications? And you can see there that 12 said yes, or 92% said yes, and 7.6 said no. Applications required with a background check to be completed, probation of 6 months for new members. And that's all over the place how that operates across the county. Does your department have an exit procedure when a member leaves the department? 30% said yes, 69% said no. So that's another mixed one. And then somebody said not at this time. But I know it's been talked about at different meetings and departments think that it's a good idea. But I don't know how many, like, that kind of a vague idea, but some do, some don't. Do you have the adoption of a standardized application process? Do you think that an adoption of a standard operation process could be implemented across the municipality and district of Lunenburg? And 81% said yes, and 18% said no. It said may have challenges intermunicipal. If it was a minimum, however, I don't think it's feasible. I suggest process of things to look for. It would be a great idea so we could start at the process for applications. Standard applications would ensure bases are covered in an application, then there could be electronic paper copies made available through all departments at MODL, and then somebody said they didn't know. Would a department's leadership team benefit from additional training in personnel matters? 92% said yes, and 7.6% said no. Town of Lunenburg, good for officers and executive members and those taking them moving up, and we have a need for better trained officers. So not just operationally on the fire ground for strategy and tactics and how they need to do things, but the majority of the time fire chiefs and officers deal with people. That's like 90, that's a big, big chunk of their time is dealing with people in stations and how people are, right? So, yeah, we've done some extra grants and stuff for training of officers for that level, for dealing with people and issues and things like that. And I've been at some uptake in that. We had done some last year, and there's another one coming up this year in November that we're signing members up for to try to give them another little bit of that, and we'll see where it goes from there. But we have good feedback so far on that. For help with personnel and soft skills training, that's I just talked about. 75% said yes, and 25% said no. I'm not aware of training opportunities for this. Maybe training options could be distributed to the departments. Are your members aware of the Family Members Assistance Program? 91.6% said yes, and 8.3% no. With any comments there? No. Does your department reward members for attending calls, attending training, etc., i.e. gas cards, stipends, honorariums, etc.? 15.38% said yes, and 84.6% said no. And it's just a lot of it's just the fact of taking funding out of operations when they don't have a lot to start with to do those kind of things, right? That's why a lot of them don't do that. I don't think there's probably only a few that do actually do that. The towns, a couple of the towns do, and I don't know if any of the outside departments do or not. And then some of the comments were paid annually for calls attended. Not at this time, but like the idea. No, not at this time. Fuel allowance, so some departments do give members coverage for travel, for training, et cetera. And, you know, if they have to stay at a hotel or whatever, they'll give them out-of-pocket expenses. A lot of departments do that. And though we currently don't have any funds for this. Would your department like to recognize a business that supports volunteer firefighters leaving work to attend calls? 75% said yes, and 25% said no. There are a variety of employers that could be recognized. Yes, very much. Fire department responses during the day would be hurting even more so than they are now. May in the future have discussed this yet. Not aware of what companies have this policy. This is not discussed with membership, so cannot give a correct answer. We just don't have the occasion to do this. Volunteer members receive tax incentives for being a firefighter, supporting business, earn tax rebates, etc., having members that can report during shifts. We have members that are self-employed and take time away from their work to attend calls, and there are numerous businesses that allow their employees to leave and attend calls depending on the call sometimes. So MODL does have a policy, and we have issued several certificates, but it's been a couple of years, like COVID kind of put a squash on some of that. So it's probably time again to just let everybody know that it is there, and there are certificates that businesses can get if they allow employees to leave work that they can hang in their place of business so people can recognize when they walk in and say, hey, this business supports volunteer firefighters when they leave work, and that's what it's meant to do. Or if they provide something valuable to the firefighter and donate something for a piece of equipment or something, they can get recognized for that too. Could you encourage more business to release volunteer firefighters from work to attend calls? It was 100% for that. Am I missing something there? One skipped it. Town of Lunenburg, it's a difficult balance. Too many businesses are focused on profit. Employees are permitted to leave work, but wages are not covered. This might help some businesses support this. MODL policy recognizes through radio ads, newsletters, give support, have plaques available for fire departments to present possibly annually. Not sure every business has a different issues. Pressure from MODL. We are remote enough to take the volunteer firefighter too long and too effective to leave work for any calls. Funding for businesses to hire additional staff. Cost of using volunteer firefighters versus paid. Money in the way of tax breaks and recognition, a boost to business, financial incentives, not sure, and some kind of incentive. Some employees just realize the value of volunteer fire service. Would the fire department like fire services coordinated to assist with school visits in your area? 38% said no. 38% said yes, and 61% said no. Pretty easy to understand that. Do you support the idea of centrally located regional training facility, for example, at exit 12A of 103, possibly? 84.6% said yes, and 15 said no. For multiple reasons, doesn't make sense without consultation. Another shining example of MODL pushing forward a major idea, which could be a good thing without asking any questions. This lines up nicely with the TOB police station lease ending. Let's be clear, this is discussing the possibility that was passed by a motion of council and set aside monies, unless I'm mistaken. Provide this with something and dropped in the fire departments to cost share, cost to run once built. So there, some are concerned that once it's built, fire departments are going to have to cost share to upkeep it and maintain it. Also a location to do live fire training with water supply. And we should be supporting the current provincial training facility and not creating a structure that will become a financial burden as firefighters lose interest in the building. What else could be included in the concept? None of the above, 33%. Truck bays, 33%. Sleeping quarters, 8. Gym, 33. Anything else, please provide more info, 33. So classrooms for training with grounds available. Hydrants, specialized equipment, cascade system, so that's to fill up cylinders and stuff to firefighters use to breathe. What services could be considered in the concept? Dispatch, none of the above, 8. Dispatch, 83.3. Ambulance, 25. Police, 16. Hazmat, 66. Anything else, please provide more information. And there was one there, dispatch needs a better place for their service with auto backup power. Areas for doing host testing, for example, is another comment. Do you think MODL missile grant formulas need to be revisited? 72% said yes, 27% said no. It's revised. If it is revised, it should not negatively impact those who choose not to do funding or fundraising. For example, a revenue assessment charge cost us money with no intern, and I have to fundraise to offset. How does this make sense? Also, there should be a requirement for a minimum tax rate that should be in place before extra grant money is given. We do have some smallest department who have lower tax rates, yet scream they don't have enough money. If you can't set the rate at the average of everyone else in your community doesn't want to pay for the fire protection. Depending on how and what you are thinking of, I'm sure that taxpayers would not want our monies to leave the community and not aware of the formula to make a sound decision. Should MODL minimum maximum funding amounts for departments? This could be setting a fire tax assessment revenue at minimum and maximums. 30% said yes, 69.3% said no. They wouldn't like to see that. What is the motivator behind this? Is MODL unhappy with some monies departments are collecting? There's a reason for is this to be on the list and no explanation again by MODL. MODL is pushing for development in certain areas, which drives the fire tax. So what else are they expecting? Is there a ceiling of tax monies? Will tax collected over ceiling and distributed to those under the minimum? If there is a stopping those of the maximum from lowering their fire tax rate to meet the max, same goes with those who are at the minimum. They can be required to increase their rate to the average to get closer to the minimum. It seems that there is a very heavy-handed idea driven by a few people without any supporting reasons on why. unless MODL is going to start taking over the operation expense of each department, then it would be the best to leave it be. There should be one pot and then dispersed based on need. MODL should let the department to continue to set their own rates. Fire departments need to spend more time on training and less time on fundraising. If this means that MODL would set fire tax rates in the districts, that would be grand. My particular district obviously does not see the value in the volunteer fire services, as shown in the last 2 years' ratepayers meetings. Apart from the 50-50 draw, what other fundraising activities does your department do? None for commission, bingos, suppers and breakfast, dances, chicken barbecues, music jams, a lot of the same kind of themes here. Dances, fundraisers with lasagna, bingo, ladies' auxiliary phasing out due to lack of members, dances, barbecues, rentals, breakfast. They still do two suppers a year, and auxiliary holds events to cater functions. So you can see there's still, you know, some fundraising going out there in departments. Would you like to suggest other items that you feel the Fire and Emergency Services Committee would be focusing on? Well, that's a big one. So I said about what happened about sending the agenda package out for four meetings. So I guess I'll have to take the hit for that because I thought they were going on the website. So I am sending out them to all the fire department chiefs as in the past. So they get them all at once instead of having to go look them up. I do not like the fact that Regional Training Center came up at the workshop and not from the membership without input. Basically, the same kind of things that were talked about above. Regional Training Center, cheaper than the giant castle that someone wants to push. So it just talks about a lot of things that we already have areas with washrooms, don't need to build a castle unless we want more to story. So basically the same kind of thing, just wondering why and where this came from and if there's a background reason for it from what you read into this. It would ensure appropriate operation across municipality versus current method, make four seats and each item 2 year terms. I'm talking about the committee, I would say. Four seats and each item 2 years and have people voted in the departments they represent. There would be a direct communication with the area rep and ensure there is accurate representation versus what we have right now. And there has been, so I'm not really sure because the members of the committee for fire were voted on at the annual fire services committee meeting. So your representation is through that.
I read that as doubling the representation from fire departments and two from either the west side or the east side or north side, south side of the municipality.
And it'd be nice if you could do that, but if you can't get anybody to volunteer to take it and there's nobody there, then these people that are the ones that want to take the roles. You can say you can have two from the east side and two from the west side, but if nobody's interested in doing it, you're not going to have them. I mean, so it might be something that can be looked at. I'm not saying yes or no, but I'm just saying, you know, like every year the opportunity comes up for people to go on the committee and they have the time then to do it. Anyway. Members are getting harder to obtain and keep. We're not getting younger. Equipment is getting more and more expensive. Look where we need to be in 5, 10, or 15 years. Maybe we revisit the proposed structure purpose over 12 years or so ago. Fire service coordinator could have details as he was in the committee back then. And we need new ideas to help move the country or the county fire services forward. They have more on their plate than they can handle now. Determining fire service standards and MODL should expect funding equipment levels, training needs. And I think more department needs to amalgamate to have more. Too many. We have too many departments with untrained people and positions that shouldn't be. So again, that's somebody else's opinion on the amalgamation part. And that's it. So if I read that wrong in that first comment there, I apologize for that. And you could be right when you read that over. That's probably what they're saying there. But again, you could have that in there. But if nobody comes forward from those areas to sit on the committee, they're going to have to come from somewhere to sit on it.
How many people were there? There was five people, wasn't there, this time that they voted on? So obviously there is numbers. So maybe, you know, it might be something to consider and talk further about.
Yeah. Well, it's nothing to say we can't do that. And I'm sure Lunenburg Regional will have a discussion on that too, right? Because everybody's seen all these results, so they'll have a time to look at them and think about them and have discussions on it for sure. So I don't know if anybody has anything. There's a lot of stuff I know to blurb out at you.
I do have one question, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Back on the question about volunteer firefighters being able to work, I read an article 2 days ago on CBC, and a chief from Digby was trying to contact the MLA for Department of Labor, and it was suggested that people write into Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia to try to get some momentum going and some support provincially for this to go through. So my question, I guess, is for the firefighters around the table. Is this something that departments have heard about, that they've contacted them about?
No, I haven't heard anything about that.
Something all.
If anybody wants to read the article, it is on CBC. It was on the 5th, and it goes into how they're asking firefighters to contact this association to get a stronger foot going forward to see if they can get some kind of legislation in place.
So that's a very good point. However, the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia usually listens to, like, regional groups that are, like, Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services, and then they have them in the Valley, and Digby has, I think, Fire Service Association. So those associations represent the fire departments in each area or municipality, and they're the voice for the fire service to the fire. I'm going to say FSANs instead of saying it all out loud because my voice is starting to go already. So they're the voice to government, so the committee or the regional group will send a letter of whatever support of that, and it's support from all the fire service in their area. Then it goes to FSANs. FSANs says good, and then they take it to government. So if every firefighter in the province writes, it's not going to have, because you're kind of taking things off the rails that way, because there's a certain order of things. It's like going to an MLA with a problem that's already being discussed at the FSANs level, and then the MLA will say, well, I didn't know anything about that, or maybe they did know a little bit about it, but it's already being worked at the table of FSANs and the government, so then it kind of changes direction and moves things off where it should be, and then sometimes it derails where they're trying to go, right? So that's why the association and everything kind of go in a group together instead of everybody doing it all at once. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, of course. Good to know. That's why I asked. Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of the times, Jess, it's an order, a special order that it got to be done in. And if you go right directly, probably about 80% of the time, it doesn't even get to the table. It's put on the back burner. So if you got to start at the bottom and work your way up the proper way through the channels. And if not, you're just wasting time.
Okay. Anybody need just to stand up and get some blood flowing, or are you okay? You. Oh, we can do the draw. Who wants to pick? Just pick one name, one department, and two people go. Is that what it is? Who wants to pick a name? Go ahead, Herb. Okay, I'm going to keep on rolling then.
Chris, Emily asked about the prize.
Pardon me?
What's the prize?
So they're going to send two firefighters to the Summerside Conference. The municipality's going to pay for two of them to go. So that's kind of nice. And Hempford's a smaller department, so it's nice to see that too, right? That's awesome.
Actually, I have a question for the committee, a couple questions, if you don't mind. There were 12, 13 after the last one that came in. 13 responses. So does the committee feel like that's you've got a good response rate and you're confident that you've heard the voice of the fire departments that you're representing?
On average, if I'm correct, Darren, but that's about average on departments we have at a Lunenburg regional meeting. Am I not right? Somewhere in that area anyway? On average. So the ones that are going, that are attending, is probably a good majority of the ones that you're getting replies from.
I think it is a little difficult because departments vary so much. You can have two departments that neighbor each other, very similar geographically, but yet the departments themselves will have completely different tones, leadership's priorities, that sort of thing. So it's a little difficult to say without kind of thinking about each individual department that responded. I would have liked to see a few more myself to feel like we got a good representation. Like if we sent it to 25, I would have been happier if we got like 19 or 20, and me personally.
It'd be like any survey. The more that we can get back, the better it would be. Yeah. But you can't really force them to do it.
Yeah, and it's also difficult because it's such a small number of departments, right? And then it's such a small number of responses. But if we look at the surveys we get back from residents, you know, we have 20-some thousand people in our municipality, and we might get back 100, 200 surveys, right, you know, from people. And I know that in advertising and in television, that if one person writes in about something that happens, they look at it as if 1,000 people have that same opinion, right? So probably, most likely, a lot of the departments have, even though they haven't said anything, have also the same opinion as well as the majority of the people in our surveys. I'm just, you know, just is regarding human nature and things like that. That's all.
Chris, I'm just going to just ask a stupid question, but if we were going to send out this, if we sent this out again, what if we sent it out with a registration package? And because it's mandatory to come back to a registration, is it possible to have that come back with it? Then you know they have it.
I don't know if that's an avenue, because that's not really a part of the registration package, like per se, right? You could put it in there and ask them to fill it out, but I don't know if we could tell them it's not part of the policy the way it's written presently. I don't think. Am I wrong with that?
It's certainly not a requirement of the policy to complete the survey. This was just a step back. You went through a workshop and you identified some priorities that you thought you'd like to work on as a committee. You presented those at the annual meeting, and then the committee felt that you wanted to do some more engagement with the fire departments. So you conducted this survey and asked some more questions that drilled down into some of those priority areas. So the intention of the survey, if I understood what the committee wanted, was to make sure you were on the right track with the priorities that you'd set. So I asked the question, do you feel like you've heard from enough fire departments to get the sense, you know, first, you can't decide if, yeah, you're on the right track for priorities without ensuring that you feel like you've met that engagement goal that you had set for yourself.
Absolutely. I think we'd like to see more departments engage in it, but if this is all we're going to get, this is what we have to work with. Mm-hmm. It's not much more we can do about it.
So it would be possible to reopen the survey and send it directly to the departments that haven't responded and give them another month. We could do that. And then if they don't respond, they don't respond. Sorry, that's just me saying something I shouldn't do.
Could we ask them, would you please answer this survey and send it back to us? like actually ask them individually. Is that a possibility to do? And then you'll get, no, I don't plan to do it. And then you know, right?
Yep, it's absolutely a possibility. I guess the follow-up question I had to that is, has the survey changed your mind about what the priorities are that you had identified? Are there other areas that you want to work? Is there different areas that you want to focus on? Or is something that you'd like to move further up the list?
I think this is going to take like an hour or two for everybody to go through and pick out what we want, what we got out of this.
Okay.
So it's going to be an evening.
So, sorry. If we do open it up for like to see if we can get more participation in it, that'll give people more time to kind of look through this, kind of digest what's in there. I know Lunenburg Regional will hopefully discuss it and try to get more engagement from them too. So, anyway, let's.
I want to know what you feel are actionable things for you out of the results that we've got.
Well, I really take direction from you guys.
Well, the EAP thing, that question to me was kind of a stunner. It's like you answer no to that question. Like, that's a serious one.
So in my presentation, the annual presentation, there is a slide on that, but I can answer that now too. So we have a new EAP program now, a new provider that's just coming online the 1st of September. So information went out to the departments and say, you know, this is the number to contact if you need somebody to get a hold of it right away. We're going to do a little presentation on it tonight, what it's about, Lunenburg Regional on the 21st, and by then hopefully we'll have some cards and things printed up to give departments more information on how they can utilize it without somebody that has to have something right now, like families or whatever. So that's kind of where we're moving with that. And it is being utilized. So it's slow, but it is starting to pick up some momentum. So
somebody to say they're not aware of it was the part of the response that I found kind of curious.
Stuff's been sent out to departments and tell them.
And the other thing that I wanted to ask you is what was your feeling about the response on the fire coordinator going to schools?
I mean, wasn't very high?
Yeah. Like
if that's their wish, that's their wish. I'd be more than happy to do it, but that's entirely up to the departments.
Is that something that you do now?
No.
Oh, you don't? No. Okay. All right.
I was just asking if that's something they'd be willing to have somebody to go help if they needed anybody to go do it. If a department asked me that I'd go do it, I'd go help them, sure.
There's also several departments that do not have schools in their district. Like, if Cornwall responded, there's no school in Cornwall.
Good point.
We don't have a school in our district.
Hempford doesn't have a school in their district.
Got it.
Randy, to your comment about a department suggesting that their membership isn't even aware of the employee family assistance program. I think that's a problem as well. So one of the things that's in Chris's work plan is to attend department meetings so that it's not just information going to the executive of the department, but members are getting it directly from the fire services coordinator. And Chris mentioned that there is usage. Frankly, I think the usage is far too low. We know that firefighters are experiencing traumatic events when they attend scenes, and I would expect that the need for the service is much higher than what the usage is showing. So part of our work, I think, as a municipality is to make sure that firefighters, the members themselves, are actually aware of the services that municipal council has invested money in to say we want to make sure this is available to our volunteers, and I don't think that that outreach is getting there. So I think we have to do something about that. In terms of Chris's role, my opinion is that your fire services coordinator is here to support municipalities. So I wholeheartedly agree with departments doing visits to schools. And if Chris can support departments that don't have a program to do that, don't have people that are competent in it, I don't see it as a regular function of that position, because we only have one of Chris. So I'd rather have our fire services coordinator providing services that support the department so that they can do the community work. It's less valuable for folks to see a municipal employee than it is for them to see their department out in their community. So we want to have, you know, Chris is a resource to help negotiate insurance stuff and get volunteer and family assistance plans in place so that firefighters can focus on the community work. That's my philosophy for the position. But I'd also like to turn the other question that you had back on you and the other committee members. When you see the responses to that survey, what jumps out at you as something that the committee should be taking action on as a collective saying to the municipality, we think this is important, you should be focusing on this. We surveyed our departments and they told us this is important that we get moving on. And I put you a little bit on the spot, but I think that the committee should have that discussion and you should come to some agreement together. And failing that, we'll proceed with the priorities that were established out of the workshop.
One thing that jumps out at me, I just scrolled back to question 14, which was sort of the open-ended one. What other supports for collaboration or training would you like to see from the Fire and Emergency Service Committee or Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services? So apart from the comment about fit testing, there's a real kind of general desire for training. I mean, 10 of the three skipped it, but 10 did answer. And other than the, good question, thanks. And the increased access to fit testing, which we know is an issue, everything else is sort of this general desire for training. There's only a few actual specific calls for high angle rescue and hazmat technician, which is extremely specialized and wouldn't really be in that high of a demand around here. Not saying it's not valuable training, however. Hazmat technician is sort of like the third level of hazmat training, and it's very, very specialized and very intensive training. Not many people around here would have it, if at all. So if there's some way that we could start to wrap our heads around what types of specific training can we start moving forward with? What capacity do we have as this committee, or should we just help Lunenburg Regional? Because we've heard this out from our other firefighters. It's not just in the level one, this desire for train me, which is amazing and can really go a long way towards retaining our members. So I don't know, because I'm new in the committee, I don't know where that ranked with some of the meetings that were held earlier. But it's just really interesting to me to see that this kind of desire for some sort of training is out there. I wish it was a little more specific that they would say, oh, we would love driver training, we would love pump operator, we would love safety officer training, like something more specific. But maybe that's another level of communication that we could say. There's some, one of them said free training. Well, like Chris said, there are multiple options for free training, so maybe we need to do a better job at communicating that. Here's the free training that we can get through the insurance levy. We just need to realize there's a demand for it and then coordinate that, you know? I would like a little more guidance on what kind of training, but it's really interesting to me that there's this desire out there.
Maybe that's something we should bring back to Lunenburg Regional on this month's meeting.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is that something we would take on as a committee? That seems to me like something that would be more appropriate for Lunenburg Regional to tackle.
Lunenburg Regional.
Yeah.
We can find different ways to work with them, and you can also give direction that you want the municipality to be more directly involved. You know, the committee identified a gap in soft skills and leadership development skills, so we've been providing that training directly. well, we've been procuring it and organizing it. I don't think that we're in a great place to take on, you know, specific hazmat training, for example, but that we do have access to budget recommendations. So if that's where the committee wants to focus and you can identify an area, then we could include that type of thing in future budget requests to council so that council can deliberate on how much money they want to put towards the fire service in addition to the fire tax rate and where you want that money allocated.
So I have a, for instance, one of the things that we hear come up is that we want more level one, this level one training. One of our problems is that we just don't have people who can do the instruction side of that. There's a course you can take that is called Techniques of Instruction that specifically trains you on how to instruct firefighters. That is not one of the free courses. In fact, that costs several hundred dollars. When I took it, it was like four, but last I heard it was like 900 or something. So if we want more local instructors, we would need to find a way to facilitate this training. Perhaps something that's something we could take on as a committee. Could we help departments fund that? If it is nine, I'm just saying, I don't know for sure that it's $900. That's what I heard most recently, but it probably is something in that ballpark. Maybe that's something that we could look at, subsidizing some of this training that's not free, but has a potential bigger picture benefit, because then we would have more trained instructors in the county who could jump on this level one program that we know there's this great demand for, as a for instance.
We can always look into it. There's no question. Even some of these courses, I mean, could the municipality put out, like, coordinate some of these free sessions? Because I know there's some courses out there that I'd love to take, but 2 weekends at $2,500 for 2 weekends, it's way out of... There's got to be other ways to get that. Fire investigation. They're great courses. There's no way I would ask for that. It's there, but it's too expensive.
Question. I know that some of our grants aren't open to fire departments. Is the leadership grant that's offered by municipality, is that available to fire departments? Because I think we have a leadership grant, do we not?
Yep, we do. I'm not certain if that one is. The municipality does provide a $10,000 training grant to Lunenburg Regional, although I can't speak to exactly how that's used.
My understanding is that they bring in training. They used to do basic firefighter and mutual aid training every year, but it's been a few years since they've done that. But they'll bring in, like, speakers or people from outside, and they'll do... They've done some extrication courses with it. So some of that money might be able to be utilized for some of this in conjunction with.
Yeah. So we're currently providing that $10,000, which is intended for training. We have another grant, which is about $7,000 or $8,000 for leadership training, which departments can apply for. We put on some training ourselves, especially if it's a year where that fund isn't getting depleted. And then I can look up the eligibility for you as to whether the general leadership one would apply to a fire department.
I do. So, no, it doesn't apply to fire departments because there are specific fire departments grants related to training. So the leadership grant that the rec department offer doesn't cover it.
There is one. We have one specifically for fire. But it's for, like, officer enhancement type training. That's a grant we have for their leadership, what we have on the fire side. So it's a grant for, like we talked about earlier, right? So it's enhanced anybody that wants to become an officer, currently an officer, to help them deal with the softer skills, like how to deal with personnel and those kind of things.
Anybody else?
So the leadership one wouldn't apply then, because it doesn't have to do with you as a firefighter fighting fire, but rather you as a firefighter learning how to teach somebody. It still wouldn't qualify because it has to do with the fire department? Am I communicating that correctly?
No, you are, yeah. The logic behind the community grants is that they were set up for community groups and fire departments were excluded. So you take, for example, like a community recreation capital grant. The fire department could apply for that money if it was for the community hall portion, but it was expected that the fire tax rate was covering upgrades to the actual fire hall and apparatus and those types of things. So I believe a similar rationale was used in saying, if you're applying for a leadership grant because you want a training opportunity because you're part of a community nonprofit, we've got a fund for you. If you're a firefighter, then you should go through your department who has access to the specific leadership training grant for firefighters or Lunenburg Regional that also gets funding from the municipality. If the committee feels that that's outdated logic, that doesn't apply, all you have to do is ask council to reconsider it.
No, I understand it and it does make sense. And you said that the money that you give the Lunenburg Regional, that money could actually go towards training more firefighters to train people. Right now it's used for bringing in people to give talks and things like that, you said, is what it's sometimes used for?
They use it for different things over the years, like they used to help use it for like mutual aid training where they have different setups across, like they do pumping, they do SCBA training. They had like general people in the area would do that training, and or they have somebody come in and do like specialized extrication type work. And that money used to be utilized for those kind of training, like general type training. But like I say, the last couple of years with COVID, it's kind of put the lid onto it. There is some discussion, I understand, with Lunenburg Regional look at doing some of that annual training again, where they put several of the different training protocols back into play again. That's my understanding.
My understanding is something this fall.
Well, they were trying to. I don't know what's going to take place.
That was my understanding. They're talking about fall yet.
They've been getting the money through COVID at the time of, like, do they get the money? Is it an automatic thing? So they've been getting the money but not using it? So they have a lot of money?
I'm not sure how much is in there.
Okay. If they haven't been using it, you know. Right. So perhaps with this committee, can we ask recommendations, or would that be fire departments themselves would ask for that money to be used for that type of a thing? Because I do think that that's very valid and very, you know, important. Right. And I also agree that that's what I got out of the surveys when I read through it before the meeting. Was training. That people, they wanted training and somehow reimbursement, you know, so that they could go to it, you know, something to help them. So yeah. I think training is important.
Okay.
So did you miss my question?
We can absolutely get information from Lunenburg Regional on the use of that training grant over the last couple of years and what their plans are coming up. I would suggest that if you're identifying a gap, then we want to add resources to that gap. Unless Lunenburg Regional hasn't been using that money for training at all for a number of years and it's not like COVID related. But I doubt that that's the case. We can find out for you for the next meeting about how that fund's been used.
Anything else on the survey? If not, we don't have a Lunenburg Regional report. New business, 6.1, member at large, term expiry. Chris?
There is a term expiring in October. It's a reserved position. And according to the term of reference for the committee, Kurt, you're welcome
Can you turn your mic on?
Sorry. So there's a member of the at large for the committee coming up in October, and the way that the terms of reference is done, there's an ad in the paper. If there's nobody that puts their name in through that, then if the member at large would like to remain on the committee, they can. And then if there is somebody else out there that wants to come on the committee and they're accepted, then they'll get put on the committee for the next term. That's kind of how it works. So there'll be a piece going in the paper. A vacancy exists for 3 years, commencing in November of 2023. So there's an ad in the paper that'll go in asking for people to put in any interest, if there's any interest out there. And there's a closing date of October the 20th to give time for that information to come in. And if I'm off base, Sandra, you can sing in there. So that's kind of how it works. Their application will come in, it'll go through the nominating committee, and then it'll go to council to be approved and move on from there. Any questions on that?
Straightforward. 6.2, fire coordinator report.
You guys are going to listen at me, rang at you all night. You're going to be so tired, you're not going to know what you do with yourself. I'll try to make this painless as I can. So this is I do every year. So you're getting it tonight. Council will get it next Tuesday. There we go. So this is just my update. Fire service awards. So there was 450 awards given out in the past year to Bruce Fino of Northfield District Fire Department, Ed and Mike Mullick of the LaHave District Fire Department, and James Wombolt, who was chief at the Conquerall Bank Fire Department. And there's five members receiving their 50-year award next week in council, three from New Germany and two from the United Communities. So 250 years of service next week, plus these four 50-year awards here. So a humongous amount of service and dedication by those members. There were 745-year, 540-year, 435s, 730, and 620-year awards. So the fire service has a lot of dedicated members who are putting in a lot of time. And station years of service, so there's a plaque that hangs in the fire departments that says how many years the station was there serving the community. So New Germany, there was 275-year ones given out, New Germany and Riverport, 155-year to Day Spring, a 50-year to Hempford. I think that's Hebville, actually. 45-year for United Communities, and a 30-year for Walden. And the leadership grant we talked about, so there's some recipients that took the three rounds of training that we did last year on some of the softer skills, and Captain Bowers with Hebville sitting over here on our committee, she was one of the participants in that, and I think she enjoyed it. This is just one of the pictures I put in to kind of break it up a little bit. Joint the pump testing facility that municipality went on shares with the town of Bridgewater is being utilized. I was there yesterday, and there was outside departments doing pump testing at that facility. So it's being utilized. It's good to see that. This is the Firefighters Memorial in Ottawa. I like to put that in every year because it's really important to see that Canada loses firefighters annually, and they're paid, volunteer, wildland, and military. So they're right across the board. There was 87 reported last year, and those are only the ones that were reported to the Canadian Fallen Firefighters Foundation. So there could be more than that, but just to let you know that it happens. Registration information from last year. So there was 204 medical first responders. And the year before, there was 171 structural firefighters for your red tag. There was 328, and there was 315 in 2021. Active firefighters, there were 603 this year, or in 2020, in this year's registration, and the year prior was 583, so it's gone up a bit. Junior firefighters, 39, so it's up two from the previous year. Auxiliary members, 124 from 125. Honorary and other members, 146, and it was 143, 103. New personnel insurance, So there's the costing with that, and there's an $11,433 grant that goes help offset the costing of that new personnel insurance. Self-contained breathing apparatus, they're all done but one, and that department just recently received some breathing apparatus. So next year, if we decide to go with a mandatory solution, that would be another one there. Pump testing was all completed but one, and it is a mandatory thing to have done now, but just one department has a pump that kind of falls out of the spectrum of our policy, so I'll have to do some work to make sure we close that loophole up. The year prior to that, they had it redone and everything was tested and performed on it. So that's just something I have to work on. Fire department total fundraising. So there was $736,160 raised. And with the 50-50 proceeds, $479,848, to the best that I could figure, was what the 50-50 draws came in. Because I know that was one of the committee and council's questions, was how much is the 50-50 draw bringing in the fire department. So it's a pretty big chunk. And their fundraising was, you know, $256,000 a little bit. Those weren't exact numbers because I can only pick out what I can pick out of it, but it gives you kind of an idea. Here's the calls for last year. So in 2022, there was 1,212, and in 2021, there was 1,029. Then it kind of breaks them up into the different areas. So illegal burns were 92 or 2% of all their calls, and so that's a fairly big amount. Fire alarms are so-so. Some departments see more than others. Mutual aid's big. Medical is a big thing for departments, so there was 260 calls for medicals, or 22%, so that's pretty big, right? And then the other ones are like some of the smaller things, chimney fires, wooden brush fires, power poles, etc. And then just to give you some ideas on the town's calls, because they are not calculated in all of these as a group. So the town of Bridgewater had 52 calls for mutual aid outside of the town, and they called mutual aid in 3 times. They have 44 active members, 5 juniors, and 30 honorary members. And town of Mahone Bay had 21 mutual aid calls, 35 calls out to MODL, where they provide protection. They have 31 firefighters, 3 juniors, auxiliary, and 6 honorary, and they had 18 calls in MODL. I don't know why I have that like that. They had more than that. Anyway, that's my faux pas.
Question. So I know all these here things are related to what I would expect firefighters to do, but I also know, do not firefighters sometimes have to be called to hold signs and direct traffic?
Well, that'd be part of like motor vehicle collisions or...
Oh, okay. So that would be part of that 26.2%.
Yeah, that'd be all part of that response.
Okay.
Same thing with structure fires.
Because I often wondered how much time they're spent doing something like that.
And again, a lot of times we'd utilize somebody that would have that green tag or somebody that's not doing like the hands-on and the hot work. So there's a job for just about everybody. Sometimes people that have their red tag have to do that also, but it all depends on who you have and how many, right? But those are the kind of layers of training that you have and certain things people can do that aren't involved right in the live aspect of the incident, I guess is the best way to say it. Town of Lunenburg has 25 mutual aid calls, and they had 46 calls in the District 1 and 2, 42 active firefighters, 13 auxiliary, 16 juniors, and 36 honorary. So juniors are really starting to really climb in a lot of departments, which is a good thing to see. These were the past priorities, or some of the top ones: maintenance and testing standards, training, recruitment and retention, standard and best practices. We've seen a few of those. Training's still up there pretty high. It might even bump up to the next one, but from what we've seen in the survey, mental health, bulk purchasing, coordination with REMO, financial capacity, and government. So some of those are still in the survey at different levels. I just wanted to show you a comparison of what the last priorities were. Information review from the workshops. Develop themes, establish a priority for areas for possible projects. So kind of a draft strategy to come up with things that emergency services can work at and council, and my direction and where you want me to hit for priorities. Items on discussion for several topics: safety, mutual aid, a lot of the things that were in the standard, right? In the survey, come up from the workshops, standards, operating guidelines, safety officers, a lot of the same kind of things, leadership training, regional training possibility, a center, capacity in governments to explore changes, grant systems, recruitment and retention initiatives, a new family assistance program in 2023, which is, you know, in motion now and it's in place, and fire departments know they can contact it if they need to. Try to foster discussions with departments showing interest if they want to merge. Continue respect for departments and their autonomy. Other things from the workshop, design, a fire service committee design, a fire and emergency services survey. So that's what we went over tonight. The workshops were held. The deadline was August the 31st of 23. Just was to get a direction from the FESC on fire services to work on important and relevant issues. These are some of the funding that is outside of the fire department tax rates. So there's money for recruitment and retention and WC premiums. That fluctuates depending on how many actual claims are done by WCB with the fire service in the county. So that can go up and down. And that total for those two things is just a little over $85,000. And the municipal grants for 23 and 24, so the matching grant, almost $45,000. The municipal grant, $68,000. Training grant, $11,500. Municipal grant, insurance grant, I mean, and the group personnel insurance is the one we talked about that offset some of the funding. So total municipal funding through those two areas that are not connected with the funding at all for, like, the tax rate is $278,000 on just optional or other incentives that are given out in grants. So this is the firefighter 50-50 draw. So as I talked about in that one slide, there was $479,000 raised from the 50-50, which is a big help to a lot of departments that otherwise may not have that funding from fundraising. So it's helped them purchase a lot of different items and tools. And that pretty much covers everything I just mentioned there. So, and now a lot of departments are posting online when they buy a tool that comes from direct 50-50 results or monies. They're putting on there that they bought extrication tools or whatever they purchased that helps them, so that everybody knows that the 50-50 draw money is going towards stuff that they actually can use operationally and what they need to do. Recruitment and retention is still a big part of municipalities, and as funding goes into that, as the last slide talked about, advertising, radio, to try to get the word out there and people are more and more aware of what's going on. Heard from some departments that help with recruitment. The FAP for firefighters and the families is a new thing that I'm going to go around and try to promote more and show how important and it is for us to be able to do that and look after ourselves and firefighters. So those are some of the things we'll be doing. And departments sometimes ask me to do some of the centering and grounding and resiliency things. Like I've done that for a few.
Chris, good question.
Chris, will the newsletter be coming out this fall? It was one created this summer?
I saw something the other day that Sarah had asked for things to go into it. So that should come out. There will be a fall one, but I just don't remember what the deadline was. But she was asking for items to put in it and a deadline she had put on it.
Okay, thank you.
So up top there, I just put some, there was a census from 2022 from the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs. So this is like a Canadian thing that they could gather information from, so it's just kind of a food for thought thing. So number of firefighters was 126,000, 90,000 volunteers, 36,000 career, 31,000 over 50, 14,000 were women firefighters, and 15,000 vacant positions. So it's just kind of a thing to think about. Nova Scotia really doesn't track firefighter numbers or fatalities or things like that 100% from what I understood when I asked the question, so I really couldn't give you stats from the province. Hours we can get, and this is kind of like the Canadian Fire Chiefs Association got from parts of Canada that they could gain the information from. Just kind of, I saw an article today actually, and some of the numbers are actually higher than that. You know, they just did another one. So they're trying to work on some money from the government. I thought this was pretty nice. Teasing my brother about his career, I asked what kind of crazy person runs into a fire. His reply was, one that's well trained. And that, you know, is what we were talking about, right? cost out for the firefighter, so I asked locally some of the costing for different things. So to outfit one firefighter, to be fully outfitted with PPE that's certified and meets all the standards is around $16,983. That's for the breathing apparatus and everything. So it's a humongous amount of money when you think about the cost involved. And everything's gone up in price, right? As we all know. Sparky doing his fire safety training. And I just got some wildland pictures here, just the firefighters in the room know, but I think it's important for council to and the counselors to see what happens, what can happen, and it can happen here. We're not in a spot where we're not able to see these. We have quite a few fires in our county, and luckily they're small, but we have a lot of fires in our county in the year that could get out of hand at any time. So it's just something to think about, and I just wanted you guys to kind of have a look at some of the pictures here. This was in Shelburne and Barrington. That was somebody's property. So a lot of the fire departments went up there. Some went in the woods. A lot of them went up through the day or nighttime, and they were doing asset protection. So they patrolled streets and roads, and if they could protect an asset like a building or a house, they could. And they did what they could to protect what they could protect while they were there. Nighttime, they weren't allowed in the woods, but they were patrolling roads again to try to protect people's assets and houses if they could.
They allowed us 100 feet or 150 feet off the road. That was it.
Yeah, it wasn't allowed in the woods at all, very far. No. So when you look at some of these pictures, right, some of them may recognize these pictures that I took them, but I just wanted to block out anything that would recognize who they are. But if you look at that, you can only imagine what the look is that firefighter's face when they're looking around and seeing what's there, right? It's pretty obvious how devastating that is. That's a fire from across the harbor, I think Port Latour, but it's across the harbor, and that shows you the fire burn and how intense it is at that distance, right? That's several kilometers, 12 kilometers or something across there. There's a bridge that was taken out by the wildland fire. I think it was fiberglass stays or whatever that went across the bridge that burnt and let the bridge collapse. Shows you burn patterns, how funny they burn, how intense they burn, and how completely they burn things. In my mind, all the firefighters there and that went from here in Chester County, they're all heroes in my mind to be able to go up there and do what they did. That's just amazing to see. They just dropped everything, didn't think about it, and just went and did what they do, right? You can't say anything about anything but good about it. Again, they had done some high-level scans after the fires to see how deep they went, the kind of temperatures that were involved. They used some special penetrating radar and things and infrared scans. There were spots that went 5 feet deep and they were 500 degrees Fahrenheit in the areas of the fire to show you how fast and deep they went. That's like in the afternoon, so the fires would be kind of smoldering, burning overnight. But because of the dew point and things like that, they're not as bad. And then later in the afternoon, like from 1 o'clock on, this is what the fire would do. It would take right off and get out of control. That's what a wildland fire does. So that's what they're seeing in those pictures. Firefighter walking through the woods, and every step they make, a cloud of dust comes off the ground. Another picture there, somebody lost everything. Another picture there, you can see where there's a couple of trees here and there that aren't burnt. It's burnt all around the property. Just kind of a hard-looking thing. Anyway, that's kind of that presentation really quick and in a nutshell. I don't know if anybody has any questions on anything. Anyway, that's just some pictures from the county and different things that are out there. And there's the pictures on the two bottom pictures or three bottom pictures in the center. That's a level one fire the level one live fire training day that was done in LaHave's fire burning building that they have. So that was actually live fire training that was done with firefighters finishing up their training. So that's the end of that. If my most will work.
Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I'm just wondering, I was just thinking of your pictures. Have we ever done a video of fire training so that the general public could see what a firefighter goes through to be a firefighter and to encourage people that maybe they might be more interested don't, mm-hmm. because people were very visual.
Yeah.
Right.
I know there was a video done a number of years ago on a training, on one of these annual training things that we had done. Somebody had come in and done some videograph stuff and had CDs put together. And I think Sarah had done some individual, or one of her communication students had done some individual interviews on tape of firefighters and the things and challenges that they had and the good things about it. But some of the recent ones were like actually following training, I don't think, no. But it's something that could probably be looked at.
It would be like to put on Facebook or on our website to share with fire departments that they can share as well.
Because I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that Sarah had put some of those interviews and those video things online for people to look at as part of the recruitment and retention drive. And then they do the stories annually on different firefighters in the county and things. But, yeah, like an actual training kind of session.
We put out again the ones that Sarah has already done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. All right. One last thing that I have, I think. Is that the last thing on there? Anyway, we'll go through that and get it out of the way. So this new FACE fire and members, if I can get that, I can't even speak straight now, the employee, I just lost my train of thought, isn't that something? Anyway. This is our new employee assistance program for firefighters and their families. So my voice is starting to get soft, and I know you guys are tired because you've been out all day working too. So, but this is important, and I think it's a benefit. So assessing care through this program is an easy thing to do. You can call a number. You can do it via different techniques, and we'll see it as we go through this. But there's short, long-term counseling programs that are available to anybody in this program, and I think it has some really good benefits. This is through Inkblot, which is through Graham Shield, and they have a pretty good program from what I see. So counseling services are right across the board, social workers, psychotherapists, registered clinicians, and counselors, and they all have a minimum master's level degree of education. They average of 12 years of experience in clinical backgrounds, and they have over 30 languages and cultural diversity, and they cover all those different things that are associated with mental and our physical health, so stress and depression, all those things that go along with it, loneliness, grief, bereavement, couple, marital counseling, family conflict, work-life balance, addiction, violence, abuse, and they have specialized training in trauma also that are at their as at the availability firefighters if they need it, finding the right counselor. So they have a bunch of different counselors that are available. You fill out a survey when you're looking at finding somebody to talk to if it's not an emergency. If it's an emergency, there's a 1-888 number that you call to get somebody right away. But if you're trying to find somebody that you're trying to deal with like on a one-on-one basis or whatever, you can go in here and answer a little survey and it kind of directs you to some of the best qualified counselors that you may want to talk to. Then you can go look at their bios and see if any one of them kind of picks up or kind of talks to you or kind of interests you. You can talk to them. If you have a session with that person and want to move with somebody else, you can, or you can stay with the same counselor that you have throughout your progress. So you have the same person to deal with. You don't switch from everybody to everybody. It's your own choice. Counseling sessions, so you have individual consultations with selected counselors are free, so you have 5 hours of individual counseling, 5 hours of couple counseling, and up to 5 hours each in category and advisory services. So I got a little more here from the administrator of the program. So you have 5 hours of career coaching, 5 hours of life coaching. You have legal consultations as needed, financial consultations as needed, and 24/7 crisis support, and every September 1st, the clock resets and they get them all back again. If somebody needs to go past that, they have pricing that is, what should you call it? It's like a lower pricing that they give everybody. What is that called? Preferred pricing, I think she called it. So preferred pricing is available to all members, $90 for a virtual hour and $45 for half an hour. So if somebody has coverage like Blue Cross or another medical coverage, it'll cover that after you get past that 5 hours of the basic counseling. And you can use virtual, in-person, and different ways of getting your sessions. So Inkblot, life support. So like I said, we talked about some of these. There's legal, financial, health coaching, life transitions, and career. So there's all kinds of things in there that can help people maybe go through different parts of their life and what they're at and what they're going through. So I think there's some really good things in there. Accessing the program, so you can access it through this website. You can do it with your HR advisor. So it would be me through the coordinator through Inkblot. Live support in English and French, and support through the inkblottherapy.com. So confidentiality is held and kept for anybody that talks to any of the, everything you do is kept as confidential. Exceptions when there is an imminent risk to self or others, harm or neglect, or if it's subpoenaed by law. So, you know, some things they have no control over what happens. And it's like a doctor or a nurse. If they know somebody's in danger of hurting themselves or hurting somebody else, they have to report that. Security, so it uses a bunch of different documents or acts of law or acts of legislation. So I looked these up because I didn't know what they all were. I knew what the bottom one, I know what the one is, but I didn't know what they all were. So this PIPA is Personal Information Protection and Electronic Document Act. And FIFA is it governs the manner in which persons' health information may be selected and disclosed within the health sector. And the FIPA is authorizes a provider of an organization to collect a customer service information with their consent. So that's that one. Detailed practice to protect your health, automated consent and collection of use for disclosure of records. So as you go through their process and answer their online, when you start to register yourself to go online and do things, this is how they collect a lot of their information on you and how it works. You can do a mobile app through Android or the iOS store, Inkblot, so you can go and do that. You can sign an email and go in through it. You can book appointments through your app. So you can have video counseling through your mobile device or whatever to talk directly to a counselor, your counselor that you pick, and messaging, file sharing with your counselor. So there's some good things that we can work with. No matter where you are, you'll be able to contact that counselor within your time allotted that you have. And that's the end of the slide deck for that. So I think it looks like a good thing, looks like a good program. Mimics what we had pretty closely on the other program that we had. And with talking with the coordinator in Inkblot, I had a meeting with her, and I think it's going to be a good program, and it sounds like it's going to work well. We won't know until we start working with her for a bit how firefighters and their families get on it and use it, but we're going to do our best, hopefully, that they'll utilize it more for sure.
The only question I got, if you go over that time lot allotment and it's at $45 or $90, who pays for that? Is that something that goes to the department, or is that going to...
That's after your five-hour allotment?
Yeah.
So, you know, 5 hours is a pretty good timeline of having sessions. So, like, the session, if it's a half hour or 45 minutes or so, you could have five or six sessions, or depending on how long they are. If you go past that, you would have to either pay for it yourself, or it would be paid for through your medical plan if you have one. So say you have a Blue Cross or some other type of plan, a lot of those plans will cover mental health or counseling to talk to somebody, so there'd be an amount in there you could capture. And FSAN's CISM team also has some funding that they've been trying to make an account for, that if somebody runs outside of that and needs help, they can approach them and see if there's some funding available there for a couple extra sessions. So there are some different avenues to go, but that's how it works.
Just a question.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Chris?
Thank you for being patient and listening to me. Kind of. But I think it's important that we get that message out there, because it is important for us to have that ability to have that for our firefighters and their families.
All right. Item number seven, added items. We didn't have any. Nothing for in-camera session tonight. So our next meeting is Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. I need a motion for adjournment. Martin? Who's the seconder? I didn't get... Michelle. Thank you for everybody. Long evening.
Thank you, guys. See you later.
Bye.